Hey, welcome everybody. This is the State of the CIO, where we talk with America's top IT leaders about the changing role of technology in the C-suite. I'm your host, Dan Kelly. Hey everyone, Dan Kelly here with State of the CIO. Hope everyone's having a great day. Today we've got a wonderful guest with us. His name is Tom Hasker. He's the CEO of Keras. Hey Tom.
Hey Dan, how's it going?
Lovely. Lovely, my friend. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Very well.
Good. Just as a brief introduction to Tom, you know, he's got more than 24 years of management and development experience in industries ranging from architecture to engineering to construction across all of Asia Pacific and the Middle East. And he's currently based in Australia. Tom, I would love if you give our audience a quick introduction, just provide a little bit of background on how you became the CEO and why you chose the construction industry currently.
Thanks, Dan. Okay, so I guess I chose the construction industry many years ago when I was trying to work out what to do at university. But I've always loved the built environment and I love the concept of going to work to create something. So over my career, I've been quite lucky. I've worked in all parts of the construction industry or the value chain. So I've spent time as a building contractor. I've worked as a project management consultant. I've worked as a developer. And I've worked in a global design and engineering firm, most recently at WS Atkins. How I ended up with Keras is an interesting story. So in the previous firm that I worked with, Atkins, we started a journey about 3 to 4 years ago of exploring ways to productize our services. So being a professional services company, the motivation behind that was we were exploring ways that we could actually decouple top-line revenue growth from headcount. We felt that from a professional services perspective, traditionally the business's growth was driven by headcount and the business's performance was heavily linked to headcount. And from a business maturity perspective and vulnerability perspective, I guess we saw that as a weakness. So we explored the opportunity of embedding technology in our services. And if we looked at sort of automation right the way across our value chain, what elements of the service could be provided through technology or enhanced through technology. So we embarked upon that journey with a company called Keras. So Keras is a technology company that developed a orchestration platform, which they call Icon. And Atkins worked with Keras in order to initially automate its services and then work towards productization. So I was involved in that relationship and the work that we were doing between Atkins and Keras. And I guess I became so curious and motivated by what I saw could be achieved and the benefits that the industry as a whole could derive from this philosophy of orchestration and productization that I decided to join the business. So I've been with Keras for 4 months now. So I'm very new in the technology industry, having spent the former part of my career working sort of deeply within the construction sector. I do feel whilst the construction industry has been a bit of a late maturer and a late adopter, I do actually hold a view that it is at a bit of a tipping point and that the rate of uptake is going to increase significantly. So I thought, what better place to position yourself in an industry that's about to go through a digital transformation, if you like, than working within a technology organization?
Right. That's a great introduction. And something that you and I were talking about prior to hitting the record button here is how certain industries, especially service-based industries, are slow on the technology curve, and construction being one of them at the front and center. I was curious, because I know this is a passionate topic of yours. You know, for maybe those listeners that are also in the construction industry or maybe in the manufacturing industry, what are the first things you look at to start embedding any sort of digital product, to start productizing either process flows or anything of that nature?
So in my experience, the starting point to explore the application of technology within certainly the industry that I'm very familiar with, which is professional services in construction, is to look at the workflows that exist in those service offerings. Just about any service-based outcome is delivered through some form of workflow, some more complex than others. And the process of documenting these workflows helps you understand elements of those workflows that can be delivered through technology or enhanced through technology. And if we then do that exercise in parallel with exploring how we can use data to really, I guess, add value and start to drive sort of predictive outcomes. If you combine the two, so you've got documented workflows, which I suppose capture the organization's delivery methodology, and then you combine that with access to historical information as well as real-time information. And then you can even go a step further if you've got the opportunity to do so, and that is to not just look at how those workflows and the data that you create within your organization can be brought together and add value. But if you've got the ability to collaborate outside your organization and collaborate with other stakeholders that influence your value outcome, then the value that you can drive is very exciting. So that's certainly the way that we started to go about looking at how we could embed technology in the work that we were doing. But the other challenge that I think is maybe not unique to the construction industry, but certainly exists, is the construction industry as a rule is a very federated industry. So you've got standalone parties that traditionally have not played well together. And their performance or their success is not necessarily aligned with the success and the performance of other stakeholders within that value chain. So you've got this federated environment where people are trying to use technology in order to productize and automate and ultimately sort of extract more value. But this federated nature of the industry really makes that very challenging because people historically have not played in the sandpit very well together. So that's certainly one of the challenges. But at the same time, it presents a massive opportunity because the industry has sort of, it's been steeped in tradition of this sort of federated model. So the opportunity to unlock that and maybe expose some of the overlap that exists, I believe, could have a massive productivity boost on the industry as a whole.
Right. You know, that's really good insight. Because we always like to give our listeners, you know, some tactical takeaways, you know, maybe two or three steps that they could implement in their own respective businesses the day after they listen to our episodes. I know something you're passionate about is purely gathering, which is an effort in and of itself, and then leveraging the data to specifically derive value so that, let's call it, IT not just becomes a cost center, but actually becomes a revenue stream. And I'm curious if you would share maybe a couple of the strategies you've used in your career. It doesn't necessarily have to be in your current role, but a couple of strategies in which people might ponder to say, how could I use the data that I have today to generate revenue and a competitive advantage for my business?
One area we're seeing a lot of development and certainly a lot of influence from technology is the space of project management or project controls information systems. I think it's a good example, certainly within the AEC space, of how organizations have started to consolidate their data into a single system that allows them to act upon their data. And I guess what's happening with the project management information systems is nothing is fundamentally changed around the way that people create data. It's just that that data is actually being managed in a different way so that clients are able to get better outcomes from the use of that data. Now, in my experience, that has been certainly at a project level. When a project is being contemplated at the outset, trying to generate an environment where all of the stakeholders in the project actually discuss and agree how they are going to share and manage the data that's created through that project. And that would then sort of start some quite interesting conversations and hopefully break down some of the trust issues that exist between these federated parties. And I guess that one of the challenges that exists there is different organizations and the industry in general has, I suppose, a host of disparate systems that exist, whether they be program management systems in the form of Gantt charts or whether it be quantity surveying systems in the form of bills of quantities and material takeoffs, to extremely rich design models where you have 3D BIM modeling, which is incredibly rich in design data. And then there's the delivery data the contractor can bring to the table around sort of the productivity and material use. So at the outset of a project, if you consider all of the different information in the form of data that's being generated and that's coexisting between each of these parties in the value chain, to sit down as a group and sort of say, listen, what is it that we can share amongst ourselves so that we're improving on the productivity or the efficiency of this project environment that we've created? And it's actually quite an easy process to start to unpack some really simple but valuable data sharing that can then be used over time to create intelligence and predictive capability. But it's maybe having those conversations which haven't traditionally happened in the past. So people almost feel as if they can't be had. But it's not until you sit down and sort of say, listen, what is it that we've got that we produce that you could get value from? And then how can we share that data amongst ourselves? Which I suppose brings the next challenge, and that is how we orchestrate the data that exists across this value chain and explore ways of how that can be done. I've certainly been involved in that in some large sort of program of work delivery models, and we've managed to derive some huge sort of successes. And when I say successes, it's really leaving no value on the table, because one person's success hasn't resulted in the next person's sort of demise. It's been a real sort of plus value add through the supply chain.
What you're describing right now, Tom, it leaves me to think about, you know, supplier relationship management, right? And I'm reflecting in your comments how you have a bunch of disparate parties that all have to work together towards a common goal, but their accountabilities are in short little bursts, right? In the construction industry. But they're all part of a bigger picture and a bigger storyline. It's almost as if what you just described is essentially you're creating an ecosystem from an IT and a data perspective with all of your suppliers, so that they all understand the current status and essentially they're marching to the same drummer, you know, in search for a better term, but you know what I mean? You're creating an ecosystem in which everyone has visibility, which is almost, I could say, even more than half the battle, just the visibility piece versus actually doing anything with it. Is that right, Tom?
100%. And I guess what we've just spoken about is in most sort of building or infrastructure projects, you can fall into the trap of also breaking the life cycle of that project down into two granular pieces. So what we've really just spoken about then is maybe the process of briefing, designing, and constructing within the industry. If you then consider the operation and maintenance, so the total life cycle of the infrastructure asset that's been contemplated, and if you then broaden your lens to say at the construction stage, we're not just focused on construction, we're actually focused on an outcome, which is the development, operation, and maintenance of a piece of infrastructure. And then if you consider connecting the data right the way across the life cycle of that asset, the benefits that can be derived by the people who use that asset and own that asset, and ultimately the disposal of that asset, is tremendous. So I work on the philosophy that from a productivity perspective, whilst everyone in the construction industry or the AEC industry works extremely hard, they take a tremendous amount of risk. It can be a very competitive environment. I still believe that there are significant efficiency gains or productivity gains that can be unlocked from the industry. But I'll go a step further to say that I can't think of anything other than technology and creating that sort of single source of the truth and this environment where the industry and these federated parts are forced to share data. So it breaks down this philosophy of trust. If everyone's playing an open hand of poker, there's complete trust because you can actually see everyone's hands are open and they're sharing the information that they're generating. Only then, in my view, are we going to really get the most out of the value chain within the AEC space. And I think that technology is the perfect platform to do that.
Yeah. And you're dealing with an industry, you know, dare I say that you have a lot of end users that really don't give a damn about technology too, right?
Yeah.
That's
another part of the challenge.
Right. So if you can perfect this ecosystem model, maybe I could say even you become the partner of choice for all those disparate vendors. Is that fair?
So I'll just touch on orchestration just for a moment, because I think it's a relatively new term. So the philosophy behind orchestration is the automation of data-driven processes from end to end. So it includes preparing data, making decisions based on that data, and then taking actions based on those decisions. So if we look at a landscape, and this isn't unique to the AEC sort of space, this is, I think, typical of most industries. There's over time, technology has been inserted into those industries in specific areas with specific products to address specific issues or to drive specific outcomes. what happens is you end up with a lot of these either applications or systems coexisting, but the challenge is that the systems themselves quite often aren't able to talk to one another. So the philosophy behind orchestration is whether or not you're inserting the system, whether you picture it as a layer that sits over the top of all of the systems that exist or the legacy systems that exist within an organization or an industry, or whether it sits underneath. But what it is able to do is data language agnostic. So it's able to push and pull information from each of these systems. But ultimately, it can allow all of those systems to effectively work as one, because by pulling all of the data from each of these systems and presenting that in such a way that it then allows management or people involved in managing a process to be able to consolidate that information and view it in real time, they can then take decisions based on real-time data and then push those decisions back into the system. So it's harnessing the power of data is, I suppose, the term that we use. And the philosophy being that we're not able to get the most out of these disparate systems whilst they operate independently. So the philosophy of orchestration is not to come and disturb these landscapes that already exist within organizations and projects. It's really to try and complement those by helping them operate together and helping them be able to really inform the people that are making decisions around those projects based on real-time information.
Right. So essentially, you're creating a platform strategy from a lot of disparate point solutions.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. And yeah, there's so many different scattered solutions across all industries, but the AEC industry, I don't know, I'm not the expert in that industry, but I imagine it probably has the most because there's just been so many different little point solutions created for very niche products. So you're forced to work with all of them, which creates a nightmare from an API chain perspective, probably, but you have to pull information from all of them in order to create a holistic view.
Correct. But the interesting thing is, which, I mean, if you reflect on it, it's maybe disappointing is the wrong word, or maybe frustrating is a better word. So you've got contractors, you've got designers, you've got material suppliers, you've got authorities, you've then got clients, and then you might have operators, and these guys have all got their own systems. They've all got their own, I suppose, KPIs, and none of these systems traditionally work together. And to tell the truth, each of these stakeholders, whilst they do work together to create an outcome, there is a reluctance to share. So that's why I think technology being able to really positively influence this sort of sharing and collaboration. I mean, another way to reference it would be to improve collaboration by providing a collaboration space where data can be collaborated on. But ultimately, I think that for the philosophy to work, as I said, it's very important that it adds value to everyone's business. So, you know, we can't be eating off one another's plate. But I personally think that the AEC industry, as well as other industries, this philosophy of orchestration and productization, I think it can be applied certainly to any service-based industry and can drive a tremendous amount of value.
And how would you suggest someone to get started? Automatically in my mind, for right or for wrong, I'm thinking about this whiteboarding session. For some reason, I had this thought in my mind, almost a design thinking co-creates meeting of the minds across your different disparate suppliers, identifying what you want the mutual outcome to be, and then working back from that. Is that right, Tom? Or how would you approach that? If you're a listener right now and say, you know, I want to do what Tom Hasker's saying, but I don't know how to get started.
Okay. A good place to start would be those who've worked in large corporates, I'm sure, would be familiar with a month-end reporting cycle. So typically, a large organization would run a monthly reporting cycle. And typically, depending on, I guess, the maturity of the systems that they're operating with, their systems would traditionally shut down, let's say, a week before month-end. All of the systems within an organization would be shut down, whether they're HR, finance, CRM. And the reason the system is shut down is because support teams of the business need to go through a process of taking all of the data that's being generated by these disparate systems, consolidating that into whether it's a series of Excel spreadsheets. They consolidate that information. What they find when they consolidate is quite often that the information is either inaccurate or incorrect, and it presents an outcome that isn't representative of where the business is trading. You then go through a process of 1 to 2 days of data cleansing in order that the information that's been presented within those spreadsheets is accurate, represents the business performance. And then ultimately, you end up with a management team who then review the information, and then they take decisions based on that information, give direction to the business, and then the reporting cycle starts over again. What I find in those environments is that you're looking back on data for starters, your business is locked into this reporting cycle that sort of recreates itself each month. But if you think and consider 1 week out of a month, that's 25% of the time you've got a group of people who are trying to cleanse information in order that a group of people can take decisions and, I guess, run a barometer over the business's performance. That is a tremendous place to start by standing back, looking at the process of consolidating all of that information and looking at the sort of the KPIs that the business is using to then take decisions and try to consider how that process can be automated. Ultimately, I believe all businesses should be working on real-time data. They shouldn't be in a position where they're having to manually consolidate information in order to take decisions. And they shouldn't be focusing on data that was created at the beginning of the month or 3 to 4 weeks ago. The obvious starting points where you've got very manual and clunky processes in a business sort of reporting or decision-making cycle. And then from there, once you start to consider the process of automation, that's when you really need to go through this process of developing workflows for all of the sort of the services that you're delivering. And then you look at how you can then automate or embed technology within those workflows. But it's really interesting, in my experience, once you start this process, you'll then look at everything through a really different lens and you see opportunities for automation and opportunities for orchestration all over the place. Then once you start embedding the technology, it's difficult to understand how you worked under the old regime, if you like. So I find it a very exciting and rewarding process to go through.
I'm excited to get started myself. That's great. You know, Tom, I'm curious. You're obviously very passionate about, I hate this term on a personal level because I feel it's viewed in so many different aspects, but essentially digital transformation. Because yeah. I feel like it's been
awful term.
Awful. It's been overused like you wouldn't believe for like 20 years.
Yeah.
But essentially, both routine innovation and actual innovation in industries that don't have a lot of acumen within the digital space. I'm curious what industry topics you're most interested in right now. You know, asking the question a different way, what are you watching right now where you think it's going to really transform the industry?
So from the AEC industry specifically, I'm watching the behaviors of the big players within the industry. And I suppose the big players for me are really the contractors and the engineers. First of all, I think we've got to recognize that there's different delivery models that exist across the different markets globally. So I know that the US, for example, has quite a different market from the UK and Europe and Australia. So there are different models that exist within the industry. I suppose it's quite clear that the line between the sort of the designer and the contractor is starting to get blurred. I think that the industry itself is trying to become more efficient. I think it has to. There are people that hold a view that the industry is broken to an extent. And I think the evidence of that is that the allocation of risk and reward within the industry is not necessarily fairly distributed. So what I'm watching is how the big contractors and the big engineering firms are sort of trying to come together and try to develop a new way of working, which is more sustainable from their individual perspectives. I'll come back to this platform within the industry solution, and I thought you actually articulated it quite well. It's trying to develop a single platform that the industry can actually use to trade on in the development and delivery of infrastructure. So this is a platform, if you like, that provides transparency. That's the piece. That's the opportunity that I see that really exists. I've seen it in its infancy in the development of project control systems and project management information systems, which typically haven't existed, but certainly is a growing market. And I think once that space starts to mature, then I think that there'll be more and more transparency that platformized sort of approach allows the different stakeholders. And then I think what's going to happen is the attitudes will change and it'll almost be this sort of tipping point where you've got the traditionalists within the AEC industry that sort of say that the industry will never change and this is the way that we've always done things. And it'll, I think, quite rapidly, you'll see this, the federation sort of break down. And hopefully, I have this utopian view that then people will really all start to pull in the same direction. And I think you'll see the industry transform itself. So that's what I'm looking at. That's what I'm talking to contractors about, to clients about, to designers and engineers about. And look, I think everyone recognizes that the industry could really benefit from transparency and sharing of data and information. I think the industry recognizes that there's a lot of recreation of work that happens through the process of delivering a project, and data is not shared in a transparent way. So I think everyone recognizes the benefit and the value that can be derived from it. It's just this process of changing human behavior and changing perception. And ultimately, the industry will become more comfortable with these project management information systems and portfolio management information systems. And I think incrementally, these walls will get broken down. I'd like to think that it's going to happen sooner rather than later. It is a very, very, I think it's the largest industry in the world, is it not? The AEC industry. So, I mean, we've all got to recognize that it's traditionally been very human-centric. There are a lot of stakeholders that need to get on the change bandwagon. So we can't, I don't think we should underestimate what the industry needs to go through. But it can maybe learn from adjacent industries. You touched on manufacturing, which is an area that I'm not quite as experienced in, but certainly pockets of the manufacturing industry, extremely efficient and drive huge productivity. I sometimes think that industries like construction and potentially agriculture, which ironically is, I think, on the sort of the maturity chain is in front of the AEC space, these industries can all learn from other manufacturing industries, such as the automotive industry, which I think drives tremendous value and high productivity levels.
Yeah, I totally agree. I personally work in agriculture quite a bit in that industry. And yeah, they're not too far in front of you, to be honest with you, Tom.
Dan, it's interesting you say that. I went to an agricultural show recently. I grew up on a rural property, so it's in my blood. And traditionally, you'd go to these shows and they'd be sponsored by, you know, John Deere or a whole lot of agricultural brands. But what I've noticed recently is you go to an agricultural exhibition and the top line sponsors are all technology organizations. It really surprised me. So it's interesting. You've obviously got more exposure to it. I think it's quite interesting what's happening in the agricultural space, but I don't deeply understand it. But I think it is quite exciting.
There's a lot of experiments happening. Yeah. And the reason you see all those tech companies there is because they know it's the new frontier. They want to get in early, and some are better than others.
Another thing I think worth touching on is what's the role of industry bodies in these types of discussions where we're talking about trying to change industries. And prior to COVID, we might be talking about trying to change industries within our domestic markets. So you can almost wrap your arms around that because you could almost consider pulling a group of people into a room that would represent the industry within your geography, even though, I mean, that'd be a large number of people. We're now talking about post-COVID, I think everything is sort of all of a sudden on a global scale. I think that industry bodies need to play a part when we're talking about corralling global industries like the AEC or agriculture or manufacturing. It's difficult to contemplate how an industry can change because typically it'll only operate or it'll only go as fast as that's sort of the slowest denominator. So I think that industry bodies have a big role in helping to sort of bring the thinking together and help industries as a whole to go through, I don't want to call it digital transformation, but to evolve and innovate in what they do. And naturally, technology will be a large part of that. But I do think that the industry bodies have got a very important role to play in sort of corralling the troops around this.
I completely agree. Yeah. You know, there's two questions that I ask every guest here, Tom. So I want to take a quick little pivot to those two questions, which we get a lot of positive feedback on. One is, you know, our primary audience in this podcast are largely C-suite individuals, largely the CIO, but we have an up-and-coming group of people that are starting their career specifically in the IT industry. And I've received a lot of feedback, which I really appreciate. You know, people want to hear from senior leaders such as yourself, Tom, on any advice that they could get as they explore their different career paths, look for professional growth, et cetera. So I always ask the question in this way, if you could talk to yourself, you know, call it 15, 20 years ago, at the beginning of your career, what advice would you give yourself that would accelerate your path to where you are today, Tom?
That's an interesting question. For me, I think that specializing maybe too soon in one's career can blinker one's view of what's really important within an industry. So for me, the AEC industry, very large. It's got a host of stakeholders that influence positive outcomes, as I touched on before, whether they're contractors, consultants, clients, authorities. I think that from an individual's perspective and their ability to succeed within the industry, it's critical that they understand the KPIs, the constraints, and I suppose the value that each of these stakeholders can contribute. Because ultimately, I think where the world is going, which is being positively influenced by technology, is I still come back to this sort of businesses maturing and productivity increasing. And I suppose the opposite to federation, where you've got more efficiency and greater value generation through collaboration between stakeholders. If you've specialized too early and you only see that you're sort of piece of the puzzle in the overall picture, it doesn't allow you to operate in this sort of collaborative space as well. So I've come from working in an industry, not being a technology player, to being a technology player. And so I find myself in a position where I'm pitching technology into an industry. And interestingly, you reference IT and the CIO. One challenge that I've come to know is I try and avoid at all costs pitching technology to the IT community within a client organization or an industry. Because one of the concerns that I have from conversations that I've experienced with these people is they're very technology focused rather than taking a view of sort of the broader business outcome that that business is pursuing or the operational outcomes that that business is pursuing. So for me, I work extremely hard to talk to the operational people within an organization and avoid the information technology people because I find that we get sort of caught up almost in a spider's web where they don't get value and I don't get value. So I guess understanding the operation of a business, exposing yourself to as many of the stakeholders within that industry and getting a deep understanding of how they make money and the value that they contribute and the constraints that exist. And then you're able to positively influence an industry. And at the end of the day, for me, it's about leaving no value on the table. Everybody extracting all of the value that can be extracted out of the process and out of an outcome. And in industries like AEC, it's about driving efficiency because you've got an industry which is operating on relatively low margins and high risks and can be extremely competitive. So what I would say to people who are going into the sort of the technology space as a career is it's critical that you understand the operation of the business and the industry that you work in. I don't think it's right that I should be frightened about going into a business or into a client through their IT department. I think that I've learned to avoid that at all costs, that I'm naturally knocking on the front door of the operations guys who ultimately, if I can convince them that I can improve quality, cost or program or help them drive higher margins, then, you know, they'll buy the solution all day long. So hopefully that makes sense, Dan.
It does. I almost would paraphrase it in two key takeaways, and you tell me where I'm right or wrong, Tom, because I could be completely wrong. One is diverse perspectives are incredibly important across industries. So if you get too niche-y too quick, it actually limits your ability to understand what's happening within not only your industry, but other industries that you could drive additional value from those experiences. And two, take a business-first approach. Understand business process and the intended business outcome before you rush to understanding the technical solution. Those are my two takeaways that I heard from you, Tom. Is it anywhere accurate?
Dan, you've nailed it. The only other thing I'll put across the top is I think that the importance of curiosity. For me, working in an organization that is going through we need to come up with a different word to digital transformation, but going through an innovation process, the single most valuable, in my view, and important thing is how you can create curiosity within your organization. And that's curiosity around how things can be improved and how things can be done better, because then you're going to create an environment of continual improvement, which is where we all should be now.
Right. All right. My final question, which is intended to be a lighthearted question, right, is, you know, so you've obviously had a very successful career, Tom, as most people we talk to, or quite frankly, all people we talk to on this podcast. But along that journey, you probably have come around a less than optimal boss in your in your history. I'm curious if you have any stories of your best, worst, which, yes, those two words are next to each other, your best, worst boss story. So tell me about a time where you weren't thrilled about the behavior of your manager in accordance to your job description.
That's a tough one, Dan. I always say that I've had a very blessed career. I've had the experience of my own business, close friends. I've worked for PLCs and I've worked for private enterprise. You're really testing me on this one. My best, worst boss story. I guess a couple of things, I suppose, spring to mind about leadership in general. I consider myself a very inclusive leader. I don't take decisions on my own. It's very important for me to have a team of people around me. And interestingly, it's very important for me to have a gender diverse team of people around me and diversity of age groups as well to gain interesting perspectives. So I guess I know that this might be a bit of a cop-out answer to your question, but I have worked in environments where those aspects have not been valued by the leadership. And I think that innovation is stifled in those environments. But for the large part, I've been lucky enough to work with leaders who lead by example. They don't necessarily sort of lead from right out in front or necessarily behind. They've led, or they've had this inclusive approach to leadership, which is really empowering all of the people around you. And as I've said, this gender diversity and age diversity in order to gain different perspectives, particularly when it comes to technology, it's critically important, I think. So I guess I've answered your question with maybe a positive spin, but I'll recognize that in maybe a couple of cases early on in my career where that didn't exist, and remembering that I started in the construction industry, which is a pretty traditional industry where some very traditional views exist. But I'm very happy to say that to the large part, I've certainly been really lucky to be surrounded by really good people, and they've taught me, so I guess, be the person that I am today and taught me what to value. So I've had pretty good experiences, Dan.
That's great to hear. I could, I wish I could hand a couple of my bad ones over to you. So you can just, we're well-rounded, perhaps.
Brilliant.
No, you did answer the question directly. You're making me ponder about this, because we could actually just explain, especially those people in the service industry, you know, the worst clients, maybe, perhaps.
Oh, I could share some of those with you, but I probably shouldn't, given that this is a podcast and it's going to go public. I mean, I've got plenty of those stories.
Understood. Yep. Well, this has been an outstanding conversation, Tom. If people wanted to get in touch with you, how would they be able to do that? Do you hang out on LinkedIn or anything like that?
I spend a fair bit of time on LinkedIn, so certainly you can look me up on LinkedIn, or I'd be happy for you to come and visit the Keros website at keros.com, or I can share my email address with you, Dan, and I'd be happy for that to be published when you publish the podcast. So I certainly welcome anyone who's interested in talking more about what we've discussed, or anyone who's interested in talking about orchestration and the value that orchestration can bring to an organization and an industry.
That's awesome, Tom. Thank you so much. And to all our listeners, if you enjoyed today's episode, feel free to hit subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. Provide us a rating, and also feel free to send me feedback. I love getting feedback. As everyone knows, this is just a philanthropic effort by me, completely non-salesy. So my email address is dan@thenegotiator.guru. I appreciate your time, Tom. Thank you so much for your help.
Dan, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening. If you got value from today's conversation, please share this podcast with one person you think who would enjoy it. For show notes, episodes, and more, please visit thenegotiator.guru. Look forward to hearing from everyone soon. Thanks, and we'll talk to you soon.